Welcome to The People Show with Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda.
What's going on? Happy Friday to you. Everyone's fired up for a Friday. You got to get some things off your chest on a Confessions Friday. Always makes it a good fun Friday. Lots going on today. Bik Nizar, Randeep Janda, Jamie Dodd as well. Tried syncing your names together there.
Yeah, don't do that. That creates a new superhuman that I don't think the world is ready for.
Yeah, you guys paired together for one Friday, came up with Confessions Friday.
Who knows what we'll come up with next?
We can't let that happen again. Who knows what sort of chaos we'll engineer out of you.
Moderation is the key.
Yes, moderation. Absolutely. But you hear from Jamie Dodd from the Canucks Hour. You can go subscribe to our pod and their pod as well, Alfred and Bruff and Canucks Central. Always appreciate your efforts. You guys have been bringing it all week. Let's finish out strong here.
You know who's finishing strong? The Canucks management team today. Buddy, they're finishing strong. They came out.
They are finishing their checks, man.
They are. They are. And that's the big news of the day today. We're gonna come with our confessions later on, but Bruce Boudreau. He's back. He's not going anywhere. All the speculation can end. All the potential drama ends right here, Bik. The coach is back.
I just logged into the inbox, and there's already Confession Friday submissions coming in.
Beautiful.
So, hey, get him in early. We'll save him. But that's coming up later on in the show. But, yeah, big day today. Vancouver Canucks announcing Bruce Boudreau. There it is. He's back. Coming back for next season. And, you know, from where we were in, I guess, February to where we are now, it feels like a lot has happened. And Bruce Boudreau returning always felt like the most likely scenario. And I'll admit, maybe a month ago, 6 weeks ago, less than that, I said on these airwaves, like, I think the least likely scenario is he comes back on a one-year deal. And then we go through the press conference, the exit meetings from Bruce and Patrick and Jim. And then it felt like, oh, okay, this situation's a little bit different here. And it still felt like, hey, he would come back. But now it was very much coming back on Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin's terms.
There was a bit of a line drawn in the sand to say, if you're coming back, it's going to be under these conditions.
Which is, I think, ultimately what you want as a Canucks fan, because you need people to have their conviction restored, and people that are the power brokers of this organization, the decision makers, you need them to kind of win. And I know it's tough to say, hey, someone in your in-house, you got to get a win over that person, because you're all trying to work together and ultimately compete together for the ultimate prize. But now we're seeing just kind of glimpses into what this management group is. And we talked about it with Tyler Mott. It's like, okay, they tried to explore a contract extension, but it's only at their number. It's not, yeah, we like you, but we also feel like we can replace you. But there's a number we like you at. If you're willing to do that, great. If you're not, we'll trade you. And same thing here. It's, we really like you, but you have to come back under these conditions. And if not, we'll explore the succession plan. And if so, okay, let's make this work for another year. And that sort of idea, and as much as people want Bruce Boudreau here long term, I understand that. The idea of their conviction coming true, that should be a big thing for Canucks fans. Say, hey, how will that translate into the trade market? How will that translate into contract negotiations? How will that translate onto July 13th when free agency opens up?
Essentially, what we're talking about here is a spine from management, right? Which is, that's what they're showing here, to say, hey, we're not going to necessarily just take any offer, or we're not going to have a conversation about, you know, all of these things. We're not going to bend. And that's important here, because whether it's coach, whether it's players, whether it's other situations, what have the Vancouver Canucks won over the last couple of years? Nothing. You have to elevate that standard. That's why a president of hockey operations, that's why a new regime was wanted in this market. So to have this mentality to say, hey, let me remind you what you've won in the last couple of years. Nada. Nothing. Kushni. Nothing. You haven't won anything. And that's why you bring in somebody with a higher standard to say, hey, until we get that, hey, once you get that, once you get to that level, Bik, where you're saying you are a contender every single season, and these career years really mean something, maybe then you're in a position to say, all right, yay, you earned this contract or you earned an extension. But as of right now, this is exactly what I want to see from a management team. Is it cutthroat? Is it cold? Damn right it is. But when you haven't won anything in your franchise's history, when you've, over the last 8 years, maybe been too kind in a lot of ways, whether it's, you know, going across the NHL, whether it's in player negotiations, whatever it may be, all of that stuff, this is what I want to see from a management group. Obviously, hit the player side of things where you are in a position where you do hire, you know, Emily Castonguay to take care of that. You're elevating the player experience by upgrading. Oh, you're doing all of that. But when it comes to, hey, you have to be in line, you have to be in this thought process of we're all doing it for one reason. I don't mind this sort of cutthroat, cold way of doing business to say if it's going to be done, it's going to be done this way.
This is admittedly the toughest path to take. It's the hardest way to go about it. A coach on a one-year deal, and that doesn't mean he's not coming back after next year or anything like that. It creates the most challenges. And, you know, we talked about this before the press conferences, but do you believe the way you run an organization is greater than those challenges can present, right? The fears are always bigger than the actual dangers. And this is why I kind of go back to Canucks fans' faith in the management group. Because if you believe in that part and say, hey, the way they're going about this, as much as the conclusions might not be, I wanted Boudreaux here on a three-year deal, do they still ultimately have the strength to say, hey, this is the way we go about it, and if it follows to our plan, we believe we will have success, not just in the coaching, but also in other parts of the organization. So admittedly, like, this is the biggest high-risk way to go about it, or it can present the most complications. But at the same time, it's just an extension of where we were from December. It's, well, okay, we didn't really come to a conclusion on the coach just yet, but we'll run this back for another year, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And we still are on the same path we were the whole way.
If you're a Canucks fan, I think there's some serious benefits to this deal today. First of all, Bruce Boudreaux's getting his. He's, according to Pierre LeBrun, making $2.5 million this year. That's a nice little paycheck for the coach, who last time this year was not sure if he was going to be back in the game. But the benefits for the Canucks are, A, like you mentioned, you're keeping a good coach in Vancouver. You're letting him prove himself over a full year. And Rutherford and Alvin did mention a couple of things that they like improvement on. So this is going to be a motivated coach to say, yeah, okay, I heard that press conference. I understand where you're coming from. And I'm going to try to maybe shut you up on those because there's going to be areas of improvement for him. The other thing is, for a Canucks perspective, and I understand loyalty to a certain point, but also for a team that's trying to find themselves and find out where they need to go, you got to have your options open. And what this provides is your options open, because the ideal is you find that structure. Bruce Boudreaux can, in his own way, maybe provide that type of game that Rutherford and Alvin want. But if he doesn't, you're not on the hook for anything. And that's important here. Having that flexibility, not locking into a long-term deal, uncomfortable for a coach, but from a team perspective. Remember what Rutherford said about managing up? You don't want to be on the hook for a lot of that money going forward. And that's important here because that at least keeps the pressure at bay to a certain extent. If you sign an extension, there's pressure from the fan base, from the media, and guess what? From upstairs as well. And for that little bit, you want to keep that at bay. It's Vancouver. That will eventually come. But that's a part of the equation here, too. The less you can commit to coaches and long-term deals, that's a win for the Canucks fan base. And I think for this team going forward, because it keeps your options open going forward.
You talked about managing up and the dollars that go into the decision for coaching staff. Pierre LeBrun reporting the option year next season, paying $2.5 million for the head coach on top of having to already pay a reported two and above for Travis Green. So it just kind of shows you how much is being allocated to the coaching staff for next season. And you know, that's something Rutherford and Alvin mentioned, Rutherford specifically, about managing up. It's when you're paying multiple coaches to do the same job and some of them aren't even working. That's the moments when you have to manage up. But as it stands so far, the freedom that has been allocated to Rutherford and Alvin and the management group has been rather robust. And the managing up, quote unquote, has not happened as frequently as maybe perceived. That, and again, that's just according to Jim Rutherford publicly.
No, and he said that, you know, what he says in public is what we're going to go by. He said it hasn't had to happen. But then when you start paying multiple coaches at once, that's when managing up is front and center. And that's where you got to, you know, when you start writing those checks for coaches and they're not working, that's the situation. So in this case, absolute win, because Bruce Boudreau still got to prove himself in Vancouver on how he can make those changes. I think good vibes are one thing, but there's a lot of work to be done. This was not a playoff team. We can all look at that 105-point pace, but that's not real. It's not real. If they were, you know, a stronger team, they'd be in the playoffs. He's got to prove that next year. So for me, this is an excellent deal for the Canucks. This is important for the organization to have those options open as well.
So what does this mean? And what does this tell us about the Vancouver Canucks and what next season means, right? It's a one-year option. As much as we can look into the future beyond that, really, you approach it as 1 year again. What does Bruce Boudreau coming back tell you about the Vancouver Canucks?
I think the fact that Boudreau's back tells us one thing, that we've been talking about a step back a lot in this market. Okay, the Canucks, is it gonna be time to take a step back? They might shuffle back a little bit, depending on some player moves. They might make a lateral move. But it feels like, and Boudreau has mentioned this as well, that it feels like he feels, though, this is the real chance to win here in Vancouver. And this is a team, probably the best chance to win of the available options. And I know in his last interview with Rob Simpson, he talked about, hey, no other opportunities. I'm not really pursuing any. It's not June 1st, so therefore he couldn't really say he was anyways. But if you started looking across the board, Philadelphia, close to home, but really, are they going to win anything right now? They're a mess. They're an absolute mess in Philadelphia. Even though he has the relationship with Chuck Fletcher, if winning is the priority, and that's something we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Vancouver is the closest thing to it. So to me, yes, taking maybe a little bit of a step back, depending on what your player moves look like, but you're still, next year, you want to be a playoff team. You want to be contending for that wild card spot, if not a top three spot in the Pacific. So this idea of somebody's coming off the roster and the team's not going to have enough to contend for the playoffs, I'm not buying that. I don't think that step back is coming. There might be some moves, but you're never going to lose so much from this roster that you're not in a position where you can compete.
Well, I think you have to separate the idea of competitive step back and a transaction step back, or lateral steps. I could very much foresee the type of transactions we see and say, well, they didn't really make a material gain, but they freed up a little bit of money and they did this. And ultimately, we see a 93, 94-point style team next season. So they didn't take a competitive step back, but transactionally, we would say they didn't have a massive winning summer. But does it set you up for the future to do something greater if you provide a little bit more flexibility down at the bottom end of your roster? What it does tell me, though, because the management group didn't have to cater to the demands here and say, hey, we have to give it a 3-year deal or something like that. This is kind of, again, a clear message of do your job. Not to steal Bill Belichick's line or something here, but this should be a message to everyone in the organization. Look, nothing has been given here. 57 games, congratulations. But as you said, like, we were in a playoff team. Still have to make improvements. We're still not buying 100% into the group. And if you want assurances or guarantees from us in the form of contracts, show your worth. Do your job. And that should be the message that should scream loudly to not just the coaching staff, but the players, the scouting staff, the entire organization. And this is kind of what you want as a new regime coming in. Send a message and just wash everything clean. And I think we've seen that a lot in 5.5 months here.
Everybody's on watch still, right? Like, the second half of the year was nice. But to your point, what I mentioned earlier, doesn't matter. You didn't make the playoffs. So what does this mean? You know, you're not committing to a coach. You're essentially saying, hey, I want to see more from the coach. There's a trickle-down effect there, man. There's a big-time trickle-down effect to essentially say, and we talk about, you know, lame duck coaches a lot. But in this case, if you're trying to find out about a team, if you're trying to find out about a coach, this is kind of what you need. You need individuals that are motivated by something. And sometimes, you know, obviously good vibes is important, but so is fear to an element, right? Job security is a motivator. It absolutely is. So in this case, you know, it's a positive day because all these players are going to be saying, hey, man, we love the vibes that he brought. We love the energy that he brought, the thought process, the way he thinks the game is different. You heard that from players. But at the same time, you're still on watch. And now I start thinking about, all right, Boudreaux's done. The potential drama with this is thrown to the side. But beyond that, Vic, you're also in a position to say, all right, what's next? Because this ain't it, right? The coach is the first check mark of the offseason. Now we start to shift focus towards those players. And I'm not talking about Andre Kuzmenko because that pitch has been made. We'll see what happens. That's on their side. Boudreaux was a part of that negotiation or that interview process. Awesome. He's back in. That probably gives you some really, you know, some assurity. There's some security for the player. But that's done. He's going to make a decision.
That might be the next thing that happens on the calendar. But, like, what's the next priority?
Yeah, you've done what you can do from a Canucks perspective. The decision's there. You don't know what you're getting and what kind of player as well. There's a lot of scouting reports. There's a lot of, you know, opinions that are coming out.
Yeah.
But you don't know what he is in the NHL.
And to be honest, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about the Kuzmenko thing on this show. It doesn't really strike me as interesting. Not that the player is good or not that the player is bad. It's just, you know, we won't have a conclusion on what Kuzmenko, what the story is until October when we see him play in the NHL. There's really no downside to bring in Kuzmenko. So that's why we haven't spent a lot of time talking about it. Not that we focus on the downside. It's just, if you have an opportunity to bring him into your organization, you do it. It's as simple as that. It's no cost. It's an ELC. And you just do it.
It's like finding a $20 bill in your jacket. You're like, man. Awesome.
Or maybe change at the drive-thru. You're like, you know what? I can get an ice cream here.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know,
more fries? Let's
go. Picking up the cushions on the couch, and boom, there's just like a couple of loonies and toonies sitting there. That's what it is. Kuzmenko, if it works out, awesome.
Go treat yourself to a Slurpee with the change you find in the cushion.
There we go. His nickname. That's Slurpee. Maybe not.
That's harsh. That's harsh. But it's just a good thing if he comes to your organization. If you miss out, it's not the end of the world. But if you bring him in, and even if he doesn't work, it's still a good decision to bring him in. And if it turns out to be kind of like a, who's the guy that went to Vegas?
There was a couple of guys. Shipachev, there's Nikita Gusev, was also another player.
Vadim Shipachev is the guy I'm thinking of. If he just turns out to be that, it's like, okay, it didn't work, but you still make the right decision to bring him in.
No, it's an ELC deal, and It's worth a go. It's like any draft pick. If you're picking, you know, at that point, you're taking somebody randomly to a certain extent. You've done your work, but if it's a late draft pick, it's a bit of a you know, a gamble. Anyways, this is what's going on here, and you're not spending money.
But the next priority is fix things that are in your house or solve things that are in your house, and the next priority is Brock Besser. The restricted free agent's deadline is going to be earlier, and so you solve that part, and then you go into. You know, because they don't have UFAs. The Horvat and Miller conversations, as much as you want clarity on that, they're still under contract for another year. The next priority is Brock Besser. And that is the thing that has to get solved here after Boudreaux now is announced as returning for next season.
And that's, you know, something we've been all focusing on in terms of what is that number. Earlier on this year, you probably would have gone long-term. Maybe more recently, I think the number has shifted to 2 to 3 years. And that's something that I think most people in this market would be comfortable with. Because much like a lot of this team, Brock Besser, and I understand there's been really tough on the family side of things. But on the ice, there's a lot to still show. There's a lot of consistency that he needs to find. And before you sign anything beyond 2 or 3 years, you're saying, all right, what do you have here? Like, what can you give us year to year? There have been improvements in your game. You have been a better playmaker. Your 200-foot game is better. There's elements of your game, but you are still expected to score. You're expected to put up points. And with Brock Besser this year, you know, when he's got that burst, when he's got that, you know, speed, and when he's got that kind of that giddy up in his game, mm-hmm. He looks like a different player. He looks fully engaged. He's dangerous. And with Bruce Boudreaux, he was dangerous for a lot of those games. Now, the question is, taking injury into account as well, how often are you going to get that? And this is a similar conversation we had with a Chris Tanev. Loved what Tanev did in Vancouver and what he's been able to do in Calgary. Amazing. But while he was in Vancouver, the injuries are also on your resume. That's who you are. So until you can show you can be fully healthy, you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt. So that's why 2 or 3 years, Bick, is the focus, should be the focus. I don't know if, you know, and I think Brock Besser's group as well, if you think about it, you probably think you can have a much higher ceiling than you showed the last couple of years, right? Most players say, hey, man, it hasn't been good, but I can do better. So if you're probably 2 to 3 years, that's probably what you're potentially looking at too, is because you want to prove yourself and get that larger AAV.
It does expose yourself to a little bit of risk from the Vancouver Canucks, but I think they're just in a spot right now where you're comfortable with a certain level of risk. And understandably, Brock Besser can walk it to free agency and say, hey, thanks, I'm going to get paid at 27. I enjoyed my time in Vancouver, and now I'm on the open market. Now, there's still the big payday that he gets in a three-year deal. That's still a sizable chunk of change, you know, $15, $18 million, whatever it comes out to. But can you come up to... can you come up to a more concrete resolution in 2 to 3 years rather than needing to define it right now? Because if you give a long-term contract to Brock Besser right now, you're saying, hey, this is what we think you are, and this is what we're committing to you, and this is what you need to be. If you don't know what that answer is, do you kind of kick the can down the road and try to explore the timeline a bit longer? And if it doesn't come to fruition, then you look at trades. If it does come to fruition, then you look talk about extension. You're able to just kind of push the can down the road a bit.
Yeah, and I think that's required here because you're not sure what this player is. And to be fair, from a player's perspective, you're probably saying, hey, I can be better than I have shown. And to me, part of that conversation is you're not only signing him short term to a, hey, let's kick the can down the road and renegotiate at some point. You're also trying to see what else is out there. You know, the trade conversation is something that you can have later on as well. I know there's a lot of folks that have focused on, oh, this is the final game that Brock Besser played for the Vancouver Canucks. It doesn't make sense for the Canucks to trade him right now because you're not getting much value.
Unless something falls into your lap, right?
Yeah, unless that happens, but unless it's an advantageous deal. But whatever team is, and all it takes is one GM to change that. It could be a Pierre Dorion Hamonic type of deal where you're saying, well, I can't believe that they gave up that much for this player. Brock Besser is a much better player, don't get me wrong. But all it takes is that one GM to think slightly differently for you to get more. If that happens, that's one thing. But rarely, when you have not signed that contract, heading into a high qualifying offer, that's a tough, tough deal to make, just based on the fact that that number is pretty large.
Bick Nizar and Randy Janda here on The People Show, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. We'll give you a chance to sound off on the other side. If you want to grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. Coming up at 1:30, we'll give you your chance to share your thoughts on Bruce Boudreaux coming back. He'll be here next season. Is that a conclusion you want? Did you want a longer-term contract? Whatever it is you want to say, we'll get to your calls on the other side. What are they saying in the inbox, in the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox?
So I love how this deal provides certainty. A lot of people saying, yes, Bruce Boudreaux is back, while others are also looking long-term. Tyler coming in with, do you see a scenario where Rutherford is buying time until Mike Sullivan's contract expires in Pittsburgh to bring him in as coach? This would be a return for Mike Sullivan to Vancouver, because remember, he was one of Torts' assistants back in the day. Who knows, right? Yeah. Like, honestly, that's a real far down the road kind of situation to be thinking of. But
I feel like Sullivan signed for a couple
of
years.
I think he's locked in for a long time.
It's about keeping your options open, though.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not as if they're targeting, oh, this will allow us to get Mike Sullivan, but it allows them to be flexible should something come up and a coach they really like becomes available.
Yeah, and hey, could Sullivan be a part of that, depending on what happens in Pittsburgh, and who knows where things... Yeah, but so could a bunch of, you know, 10 other coaches, for that matter. But I think that is the key takeaway here, is flexibility. You don't have to commit to an extension because you feel like you need to. Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin are not being told what to do here by a coach, a player, and agents. That's the early signals anyways. So having that flexibility, very important in a cap world, but even dealing outside the cap, because you're still spending somebody's money. It might not count against the cap, but it's still going to bite you in the rear end if you spend too much of it.
Vancouver Canucks also reported by our Thomas Trantz, The Athletic as well. You guys talked about it on the Canucks Hour as well, some changes made to the organization, to the training and athletic staff today. Now, look, this is part of new regimes. It's oftentimes unfair, but you know, when changes are made to the higher-ups in the organization, is there a new vision that they're trying to put in place? And so the strength and conditioning staff and the athletic therapist staff had some changes today with John Sanderson, Dave Zarn, Roger Takahashi, with some changes there. And this is, I imagine, part of the new vision for a new regime coming in. Tough realities and very unfortunate. Again, we talked about this the other day when the scouting changes happened. It's, you know, the people that don't get a lot of headlines and people that don't have the biggest contracts either.
Yeah.
Your heart certainly goes out to them.
Absolutely. And especially, you know, individuals that work behind the scenes, having, you know, worked in those hallways during games a lot, you run into Dave Zarn or Roger Takahashi and others, and that sucks because these are individuals that have worked with the organization going back, we're talking decades now. So there is change. There is, you know, regime change does have this side of it as well, where you're seeing whether there are changes at the executive level or the scouting staff or on the training staff as well. It's a part of the game, unfortunately, but I know, you know, especially with an individual like Roger Takahashi, very, very popular individual within the organization amongst players who still keep in touch with him, even though they're long retired, mm-hmm. leaving Vancouver. So definitely tough to see, especially with somebody so established here in Vancouver dating back many years.
And these are very important roles because, you know, when we talked about this, like members of the organization behind the scenes a couple of years ago, when it was like Judd Brack and Ian Clark and, you know, when it comes to your scouting staff, very important part of the overall health of the organization, the amateur scouting staff, as much as they play a role, like everything is about the pro side. And if you can provide edges for your pro side and you're making changes to your pro side, like that's the stuff that gets a direct translation. The scouting staff, you try to find these people and there's still a road to get to the stage of, okay, now they're here at the pros. So you still have to go through the development process. But when you're making changes to the on-ice product and how the people can interact with the players to help on the on-ice product, it's significant. And I know there were scouting changes last week. This, to me, is a bigger news because it translates directly to the pro side level. So we'll see what kind of changes are also forthcoming. If you have a phone line, I see you. You're up next on the People Show, so just hang on to it through the break. We'll get to you. Your chance to sound off, 604-280-0650. Bruce Boudreau is back. Your thoughts next here on the People Show, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Philadelphia.
You know when Chris Mabers on the show.
I put a little southern twang on that. That's my line. I'm sticking to it.
When all of our worst moments become the return from break bumpers.
Was that
a Philadelphia accent? Or?
No, that was a brown guy if he lives in Tennessee saying Philadelphia.
It's a very specific dialect.
Very, very niche.
Incredible. I didn't know you were a man of so many talents.
Yeah, I was, you know, if I ever take a trip to Memphis, I'm set. Philadelphia. Perfect.
Get your thoughts in 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Already some Confession Friday submissions strolled in. I feel like people wrote them on like the notes app of their phone. Like, Friday, okay, 1 o'clock. I'm going to unload onto the inbox and been storing these up all week.
They definitely are.
The confessions have been coming in hot so far.
I would say we're running at like a 50-50 readable versus unreadable ratio right now.
Which is pretty standard, let's be honest.
And look, hey, I appreciate the unreadable ones. Those are very entertaining.
If you tag it with CF, by the way, it's a big help for us. But not required, but we always appreciate it.
What I love is that the people have started doing this themselves.
Yeah.
Even before we mention it, they started coming with CF. That's a great idea. You're the People Show.
Shouts to Reiner Matt for starting that in the inbox. We appreciate it. Rager texting in. I legitimately, that's what I did. So save them up all week and then unload on Friday. Hey, look, the themes are already starting to emerge. The trends are starting to emerge. We're picking up on the tendencies, and this will evolve as we go along. But keep those coming in, 650. We'll do those in the 2 o'clock hour. Faisal Kamisa will join us in the 2 o'clock hour as well. Art O'Cal as well in 2 o'clock. And Chris Hebb, BCHL commissioner, in the 3 o'clock hour. We promised you your chance to sound off on the news today. Bruce Boudreau coming back. A couple of people dropped off the line, but call us back. 604-280-0650. A couple open lines right now. Let's go to Paul in Poco. Paul, what are you thinking today? Bruce Boudreau coming back.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, I have a lot of faith in Jim Rutherford. I mean, when you saw him in that interview, you knew this guy was in charge. He knew he has a plan in mind. And that's the thing you love to see, is that, you know, in his head, he knows exactly what he's going to be doing in the next 3 to 5 years for this organization and how to improve it. And you can tell that from his answers and the way he spoke. Regarding the new GM there, Alvin, I don't know much about him and his assistants. But one of the questions I'd like to ask him is that when he released those 5 scouts, are they diminishing the scouting, human element of scouting, and more reliant on the technology? or are they or are they going to be replacing those five scouts? Five scouts is quite a bit. Are we always allowed to talk about hockey? Can I talk about something else?
Fire off, man.
Yeah, just about baseball. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but it seems like almost every game the umpiring has been horrendous. There's always a call. It's almost like you can give every game the umpire is an error, you know, whether it's a missed call or just a bad call, especially as well with strikes and balls. And they've been talking as well at the MLB about computerizing the ball and strike issue. And I'm all for that human element. I think it keeps everything, more, less predictable. But when it comes to strikes and balls, it happens so fast. You can't dispute it. If they had it computerized, I'm starting to look at it like maybe I'm interested in saying yes to that type of plan. What do you guys think about that?
I appreciate the call. That is Paul in Poco, 604-280-0650, if you want to chime in. A lot to get into in Paul's call there.
All right, I'm going to get to the second part first.
Okay.
I'm all for robot umps. I've been calling for it for the last couple of years. Have a standard strike zone. I'm with it. Let's go back to the first topic, though. Unless you got a soliloquy on robot umps.
I know earlier today on the Merrick Show, they were talking about officiating because of the NHL playoffs.
Yeah.
And Elliot was kind of making the point. It feels like every sports reporters right now are saying it's the worst it's ever been. It's the worst it's ever been. And I don't know if it actually is, or we just have more means to complain about it. I think it's the latter, and this echo chamber just gets created. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You think it's bad in football? You should see what's happening in baseball. You think it's bad in baseball? You should see what's happening in the NHL, and on and on and on and on.
I think we do have more means to complain about it, especially in baseball, where it's a black and white thing.
It's so direct.
And yes. You can put the strike zone maps, right? And they get you see the reports and the graphics after the game for every umpire. So I do think that's part of it. I also think the umpires are doing a terrible job this year.
At least with hockey and other sports, you can say, all right, there's an element of human error. We're willing to excuse it. Almost every single baseball game has a number of errors. And to your point, now the fact that you can see where the ball went, and players are pretty smart themselves. If there's something that's way out of the zone, they know. And sometimes it's like posturing or whatever. But like, we're seeing more of these incidents now. And that's for a reason, because officiating does stink, guys.
The umpires, they feel like they're pulling like a George Costanza and trying to get fired. They're like, look how bad we're doing. Don't you need robot umps here? That's what it feels like to me. It's been so bad.
Sorry, I got distracted. I just got the most fire Confession Friday take. I cannot wait.
Oh, man. I love that one too.
This is unbelievable. We're not even going to tell you which
one
it is.
No, we can't. We'll just bring some good ones if you have them.
Whoever just texted in your Confession Friday, I tip my hat to you because that was phenomenal. All right, let's get back to the phone board, 604-280-0650. If you've got thoughts on the big news today of Bruce Boudreau coming back, or apparently anything else, we welcome it, 604-280-0650. Al in Langley. Al, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys. I'm glad about the Boudreau thing, and I'm also glad that they just said, listen, you got a deal for next year, and let's just work off that deal. You know, whether they worked out a few other things, but I'm glad there was no extension there. I mean, I would like to, but I think we're paying enough coaches as it is. To not coach. Guy, whatever happened to what happened with the cap hit on Evander Kane with San Jose? And I'll throw two more things out there. You can look at other teams' rosters for next year and pretty much guarantee what players will be hitting onto LTIR. And when Kessler got traded, who hasn't played in years, that was such an embarrassing look for the league. Like, they really got to get that LTR garbage under control, because it's such a bad, bad look, you know, when teams can go way over the cap come playoff time. Anyways, just the touch on the Kane thing, if you guys know anything about that cap hit with San Jose, because I know when Mike Richards got himself into some hot water in L.A. years ago, that they were able to sever the contract, but they still paid for it under some condition of cap friendly there. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. That's Al and Langley, 604-280-0650. If you want to chime in about the Boudreau hire or rehire or the extension or the renewal, whatever you want to call it, and anything else. So my understanding of the last detail of the Evander Kane thing is the grievance is still under investigation.
Yes.
And that process is not like, oh, well, this is what we think, and it's done. It, it, grievances tend to take some time here, and so that hearing will be kind of a prolonged process.
So backing that up, he had that 7-year, $49 million deal. It was terminated by the Sharks because they said it was grounds for termination. All of that stuff we know with the AHL, COVID protocols, so on and so forth. But they did file that grievance to NHLPA in January, and it's been just over 5 months now. So from my understanding as well, it does seem like that grievance is still ongoing. Don't have anything on that front.
Now, if his release is upheld, I think there was $23 million left on the cap, and so they'll be clear of that. But again, this is a grievance process that takes a while. You go through the PA, you go through the courts and everything. So that's I don't believe there's an actual settlement on that just yet. But appreciate the call. Appreciate the question. As always, 604-280-0650.
Okay, before we talk some more Boudreaux as well, though, I think a lot of this, and even the piece with Rob Simpson over the last couple of days, there was talking about, you know, other opportunities. There was no desires to pursue opportunities. And, Bick, we talked about this maybe a week and a half ago. Are there actually other opportunities? This weekend is a big weekend for teams getting eliminated. You got Game 6 going tonight, Game 7 on Saturday, and then we'll see what happens on Sunday. But do any of these teams provide, and now it's kind of a moot point because Boudreaux is coming back, but does it provide, any of these teams provide an opportunity? Let's just say if he hadn't decided to come back to Vancouver, like, were any of them realistic? Because I think the playoff teams, like, Toronto's not making that move now. Toronto's actually been playing better than Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. Do you think they're getting rid of Sheldon Keefe after they outplayed the Tampa Bay Lightning for most of the series? And even if they lose in Game 7, it's hard to criticize the coach.
Unless something spectacular happens in Game 7. But even that, it's just the way the series has gone, it's been very even to say, okay, look, if you lose, it's a two-time Stanley Cup champion, you played well, you know, Matthews has been there, Nylander has been scoring for them as well. You would say, hey, bounces go your way, bounces don't. The previous years, like when you're up 3-1 and you lose that one, you have a big lead. Like, there have been some iconic losses by Toronto, which we've all mocked and pointed at and said, well, you can't do that. This one, unless something, again, spectacular happens in Game 7 where they're up 4-1 and they lose, different conversation. But based on what we've seen so far through six games, this is very, very even between Tampa and Toronto.
5-on-5, and I think you could argue, you know, it's even, if not advantage Toronto. In a lot of ways, the way that they've been able to storm out back in games and to a certain extent carry the play as well. So I do wonder about that job. We were saying for sure Sheldon Keefe is gone if they lose in the first round. I think the standard has changed a little bit because their gameplay has been stronger. They're not Muhammad Ali rope-a-doping.
Yeah.
They're actually the aggressor. They're like more George Foreman or Mike Tyson in their prime. They're going after it.
Did you think they were impressive yesterday? I kind of felt like they were a bit lucky to get those goals there at the end of the second.
Okay, here's the problem. I think they were good for the most part.
Yeah. Were they full value for that score line going into the third period? And I think maybe 2-2 would have made a lot more sense.
Yeah.
But, look, you earn your luck, obviously, in the league, and they created those chances. But I thought Tampa was deserving to get the W yesterday.
I think they're a full value, but here's the problem. When you play at Tampa, those one or two mistakes,
yeah,
they bury you, man. And Kerfoot with that pass, Steven Gerrard style, just passing it to nobody. Like, brutal. Brutal, you're making that in the playoffs against the defending two-time Cup champions. And then beyond that, you know, Cirelli makes a great play, but if I'm Jack Campbell, I want that one back.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, there's a mistake leading to that goal as well. So, you got to be
mind
really...
You, like, Vasilevsky bats into the air and it falls
sure.
in. Like, that's random, too.
Yeah, that's random. But, like, to me, those one or two mistakes against Tampa, they hurt you, man. And that's the difference. Like, you can outplay them. You can tilt the rink for 5-6 minutes at a time, but you can make those mistakes against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
604-280-0650 if you want to chime in. This one, if Rutherford wasn't sure that Boudreaux would coach with structure, I wonder why he didn't just find a different coach that would and not waste time. Or is it better? Or is it no better coach available now? But that's from Berman and Coquillum. And we've talked about this as well. Like, what's the coaching market right now? Is there a guy you wanted to bring back? And look, part of this too was it was reported by Elliot Friedman that the opt-out clause for Bruce Boudreaux had a payback to it. So, you know, you go back to Rutherford's comments, well, you don't really want to be paying three coaches, four coaches kind of scenario. So is this just a scenario where that developed of the way that the contract was handed out to Bruce Boudreaux? Everyone kind of buys into this for another year and say, hey, we'll solve this problem as we go along.
And I think the phrasing of Rutherford's comments are really important, too. It's that there's a couple of things that we want to work on, right? Like, he mentioned improvement. So to say he wasn't sure if he could coach with structure, I don't think that's accurate. It's more of a, hey, these are areas of improvement. Now, in the end, if Bruce Boudreau provides that context, provides that you know, that structure to their game, that's a question that he's got to answer. So this is a challenge, but I don't know if Boudreau is unable to coach that way. We'll see, right? He's never been known as that X's and O's coach, but prior to our, you know, this announcement today, we were discussing the assistant conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still one that could take place? To me, that's still a very real conversation, because if you're comfortable with your right-hand man or, your top two assistants being people that you've worked with before, and maybe they provide the structure to your game, maybe they provide those details, I think that's pretty important. So we'll see if that happens. There's been guys that Bruce Boudreau has worked with in the past. I'm going to look at Minnesota, who just got dumped out yesterday of the playoffs. There's an individual by the name of Bob Woods, who Boudreau worked with in Minnesota. He also worked with in Washington.
And Anaheim,
if I'm not mistaken. You know what? Actually, he didn't work with him in Washington. He worked with him in Anaheim. But Minnesota got embarrassed the last two games in that series. Are there changes coming there? Could there be some potential, fallout there? We'll see. So
Dean Evason seems pretty safe there.
Dean Evason does, but you know how that works. Mm-hmm. Generally, I'm not talking about the main coach. I'm talking about other options. Like, there are some other conversations to be had of, is this it? Are you coming back with the exact same staff? As of right now, we know Boudreau is coming back. We don't know everybody else.
On last night's games, you're Minnesota Wild.
Got worked.
I tuned in because I was so focused on the Tampa game. I wanted to get ready for the Edmonton game. I did tune in at 1-0, and I saw like four puck battles. The Wild lost, and I was like, yeah, they're out. They're done.
No, they were not. Yeah, the Minnesota Wild were not in that game. They're mentally somewhere else, and you can have Kirill Kaprizov engaged for most of the series, but they didn't have consistency across the board. And the problem is, against other teams, that might work to a certain degree. It's not going to work against St. Louis.
As I plug my mic back in, you know who I feel bad for?
Who's that?
Cam Talbot. It just felt like he had no chance.
No win situation.
He could have the most sparkling performance. I don't think it was going to matter. 604-280-0650 if you got thoughts on the Bruce Boudreau announcement today. Jack in Nanaimo. Jack, welcome to the show. What's up?
I just wanted to kind of chime in on it. I heard what they were saying about, listening to the management. They wanted structure. Well, we saw what Mr. Green had with structure with these players. Now, whether it's personality or skill set or whatever, but then Boudreau comes in with a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of a different attitude dealing with his players, and they got the results. Now, I'm not knocking structure because God knows you need it, but maybe they need to look at trying to supplement the people that are there with the kind of structure and the player that fits the structure that they need. And that's my only comment. I mean, he can only do what he can do with the people at hand, and he didn't bring them here. And personally, I love what Boudreau did, because I'm that kind of a coach. I'm a player's coach. I think you need structure, but I also think you need to find a way to get your players to believe in themselves and in what you're doing. Thank you.
Good call. It's Jack from Nanaimo. Absolutely. And, the other part of this, too, is talent, right? Like, you can have all the structure in the world. The New York Islanders have had great structure for a couple of years. Now, in their philosophy of how they want to play, talent still rules all. It's going to win out. And the Islanders pushed it as far as they could. They were as combative as they could possibly be in the Eastern Conference, and they got to the Eastern Conference Finals. And what happened? They went up against superior teams that had more talent that could overcome structure and win out. And now the Islanders are in a spot where they said, you know what, we have to make a change. Maybe they have to change their philosophy of what they are entirely. But, to Jack's point, it's like, yeah, structure is great. You can only create what you have that's available. And Bruce Boudreau didn't have any input on what this roster is. Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin didn't have any input on what this roster is. You can make the odd change of Hamonic out, Dermott in, but the main surgery to get the most out of this group and the most what's best for the Vancouver Canucks is still forthcoming.
It is, and that's why you look at the players and those next moves. That's going to be really important, because even when we talk about structure, when we've talked about, you know, zone exits, right, getting the puck out of your zone, yes, it falls on the defenseman because the puck is on their stick the most, but if you're a forward and you're not playing the right way, you're not, you know, supporting those defensemen, you're not providing them with an individual to pass to, if you're blowing that zone early, that's also a part of that. That's a part of that, and players have to be in line with that mentality to say, I understand how to play this style of game. And that's what I'm excited for, because I think with Boudreaux, we saw what this team was last year, mostly to a couple of players. Quinn Hughes, Thatcher Demko, and JT Miller, right? But realistically, and Rutherford's been very blunt in his assessment of this team, they won 50% of their games because of Thatcher Demko. Now, if you have time to work on this, and if you can bring in the right type of player, and I don't know who's leaving town, but there will be change, there will be turnover. But if you can find wingers that play your style of game where you're fully committed defensively, but they're also straight line burners and they are dangerous in transition, I think those defensemen, the ones that we criticize often in this market, they're going to look that much better, because you have wingers that are playing to a personality, more of a team game, more of a structured game, more of a defensive game. They're responsible on both ends. And there is some work to be done for the Canucks on that. And some of that could be internal improvement. Maybe these guys are improving and gelling with a new strategy, a new structure that clearly management wants to play with. That's on Bruce Boudreaux and his coaching staff and these players, whoever they are, whether they're in town now or whether they're coming in from different teams, they got to get in line with that. So I'm excited for that, but there's a lot of work to do to become that. And part of that is, yes, bring in new players.
And yeah, I didn't mean to suggest that one is significantly more important than the other. Dino texting in. Obviously, it's not a choice between just talent and structure. Great teams have both. The Lightning, for example, and you see them having their success in
Washington
seasons.
Had that, yeah. When Trotz was there,
right? You need both. You can't just have, you know, you end up being the Toronto Maple Leafs. No structure and just, hey, we're talented. But we're out in six games.
Or the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah,
that's a classic example where, hey, yeah, they might put up points, but when the game, you know, is they're up 2-0, can they give away that lead automatically? We saw it yesterday. They end up winning, but they still gave up a 2-0 lead.
All right, Bick Nizar and Randy Janda. We'll wrap up the hour here in just a second, but gearing up here for the hottest segment in Vancouver radio, Confessions Friday. They have not stopped streaming in. Every time we look over to Jamie Dodd, he is just keeled over in the corner, like devastated by some of the replies we're getting and the submissions we're getting.
Yeah, we're going to have to work out a filtration process here, but I think it's gone well the last couple of times. If you're new to the segment, this is essentially your chance on a Friday to come with your confession. It could be sports related. It could be something entirely different.
Deep, dark, sort of, that you've not told anyone, but it will be anonymous.
You want to get it off your chest. That's what we're here for.
We're going to share it on air, but it's anonymous, completely anonymous. You can put your name on it if you want, but you don't have to either.
And apparently, Faber, so this is last week's intro, yes?
It's the same music, but I've rejigged the intro to the...
Made some tweaks.
I was really worried that you changed maybe the music.
Hopefully you took out the people in the butts reference.
It's so seedy. Like, I'm cringing right now.
So good.
We also didn't take out the people in the butts is still in there.
Oh, man.
What would Confession Friday be without the Showtime Friday night music?
If I could confess one thing, it'd be like, why did I show up to that work that day when I said people in the butts? Why?
All right. We're going to go to break. We'll be back with Faisal Khamisa, Sportsnet host, the Vibes in Toronto, and then, 15 minutes away from Confession Fridays segment sweeping Vancouver. It's all happening here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.